Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. Happy Monday. The Lakers get the big win last night over the 76ers. The return of the king, LeBron James, 29 points. He's back, baby. We got a lot to talk about today. We're going to get into LeBron's big game, the road trip. A 2-1 road trip. Was it a successful road trip for the Lakers? We'll talk a little bit about Wednesday's big matchup with the Spurs in the NBA Cup. And we'll take some of your questions and comments coming in from those of you who are joining us live. He's Yovan Buha, Jason Tipf. I'm Trevor Lane. Guys, I love starting off a week with a Lakers win. This is a great way to kick off a Monday.
Well, and a moment that we've all experienced so much over the course of the last half decade and change that we weren't sure if we were going to see again, but it didn't take too long for it to show up again. And that's LeBron James dominating a game in crunch time, which... it's just fun to watch, man. That was such a fun game.
Busted out the quadruple silencer, crowning himself. And yeah, it was vintage LeBron and vintage being last year.
That was awesome to see. So much fun. I mean, the crown celebration, holding it down, that was amazing. Jason, we're already getting questions coming in. It's somebody saying that they thought your hair was going to be cut for this show.
Okay, guys, I am officially thinking about it. That doesn't mean it's going to happen right away. Okay, like for starters, what do I do? Do I go back to really short hair? Do I go somewhere in the middle? Like, I gotta find out what airport I'm flying to before we leave the tarmac. Okay?
We'll have to make a poll or something. We'll let everybody vote on. Would you allow your hair to be decided by the masses?
Literally, no chance.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. All right, let's get into it. Let's not bury the lead. LeBron's big game, 29 points. He was awesome. And a night when they needed him to be fantastic. Austin Reeves had maybe the worst shooting game we've ever seen from him. But LeBron steps up in a big, big way. He was moving the ball well, liked what we were seeing out of him in terms of surveying the floor, finding the right pass, the right ways to attack, was hitting shots, was hitting the fadeaways when he was able to get an ISO and the double didn't come. When the double did come, he was passing out of it. And I particularly loved LeBron as a screener. We saw that action with him and Austin Reeves. We saw that action with him and Luka Doncic quite a bit, and that was particularly effective. Yovan, I know you haven't had a chance to sink your teeth into all of this yet because you were traveling. You've seen the game, though. You haven't publicly given your comments. What are your thoughts on what LeBron did last night?
Yeah, unfortunately, I was traveling back last night. Didn't plan my return as well as I should have. So I was watching this game on the plane, and the Wi-Fi was not the best, so I kept having to rewind. And at, you know, similar to the Raptors game, I at some point, I didn't catch that one live. Was like, okay, it looks like this is not going to overtime, so there's going to be a decision here. And lo and behold, LeBron James scores 10 straight points, 10 of his 12 points in the fourth to ice the game. And to me, this is the most LeBron has looked like himself since returning. I think we had seen some flashes, like the playmaking and in the decision making, I think have been there from a passing perspective. And we've seen as that secondary side guy just picking teams apart with finding cutters and shooters and roll men, like he's been able to do a lot of that at a very high level. And he also had the 25 point game against the Clippers where he started to look a little bit more like himself. But this game by far to me was LeBron's best game since returning, and coming off of that Toronto game where the streak stops, he does make the game-winning assist to Rui, but he was 4-for-17 in that game and was looking like every bit his age at that point of a 40-year-old in decline. But I thought that the key for this one, you mentioned it, Trevor, was spamming screening actions with LeBron. And it was LeBron and Austin earlier in the quarter. And then they finally went to the Luka-LeBron two-man game. This is the most I can remember them spamming the LeBron-Luka two-man game. And LeBron had Paul George on him. Luka had Quentin Grimes on him. Those were the primary matchups to close this game. And one interesting wrinkle within the two-man game was that it would often be Luka pitching the ball to LeBron. LeBron pitching it back to him quickly, almost like a give and go action, and then immediately going into a screen out of that, which I thought kind of disrupted the defensive rhythm for the Sixers. But LeBron as a screener and then a roller or a popper, really effective down the stretch here. And this is an element of the Lakers offense that they have not really tapped into, even going back to last season. It's something that I have repeatedly clamored for more of. I'm sure you guys have as well on your shows. So it was encouraging to see that, because again, that is a part that it's often been LeBron off of the ball, or if he is screening, it is for Austin, not for Luka. But for them to have so much success for that, I think this is proof of concept of a totally different part of LA's offense that they need to tap in more moving forward.
Jason, is that what you saw? Is this a path forward? Maybe not a total shift, because we're still talking about a very high volume pick and roll team, the best pick and roll team in the NBA right now. But is this an important, maybe new arrow in the quiver, a new tool in the toolbox for the Lakers to go to on a consistent basis, putting LeBron as the screener in this action?
Yeah, so he's been the screener plenty with Austin over the years. We just saw more balance in the sense that he would run it inverted with Austin also screening for him. There's a second thing that I'm not going to touch on right now, but LeBron is running about half as many possessions as the half court initiator this season as he did last year per game. We'll get into that in a little bit, but that what that's leaning towards in this case is him screening for Austin more than Austin screening for him, but it is something that he would do in the past. The specific thing we called on, if you guys remember back in the Thursday show, we discussed this specific concept of the LeBron Luka two-man game, and the specific thing that we brought up was when they blitz Luka. And if you guys remember, on the possession right before LeBron hit the tie-breaking three at the top of the key, Ayton was screening for Luka still. Most of those threes that LeBron hit at the beginning of that sequence were him burning Paul George, tagging Ayton on rolls after blitzes or after at-the-level coverages on Luka-Ayton ball screens. But what happened was is they started blitzing Luka, and Luka had a bad turnover where I don't know why he thought Ayton would pop. Ayton hasn't popped a single time all season on a ball screen, but he had a bad pitch out of bounds, a turnover right before that possession where LeBron hit the three. And what ended up happening is the Lakers on the very next possession had LeBron set the screen. And this is exactly what we were talking about last week on Thursday. As soon as you identify that the coverage being called by the opposing head coach is blitz Luka on all of his ball screens, then bring LeBron into the action. Because if you run it in a traditional sense throughout the game, it's just going to be a switch. There's not going to be much of an advantage gained there because LeBron and Luka typically dictate the same types of defenders. There will be some teams where they don't have a body for both of those guys, and you can go to that for switches just to get Luka more favorable matchups. But specifically in the instances where teams are top down, we're blitzing Luka every time. Once they make that call, it's really smart to get LeBron into the action because now he's going to be that trigger man in the 4-on-3s to start that action. But really the story of this game to me is the fact that the Lakers naturally kind of followed the rhythm of the game with all three guys. And this is where it gets kind of silly. When you hear teams and when you hear fans talk about basketball, sometimes they'll be like, oh, who's going to take the last shot? Who's going to be the guy that has the ball in their hands at the end of games? And it's silly because the vast majority of the time, this sort of thing kind of works itself out naturally, especially when you have smart basketball players. So for instance, LeBron and Austin running ball screens to start the fourth quarter, they're consistently meeting Austin up at the level and chasing him over the top. So what's the read? LeBron in the pocket, LeBron in the pocket, LeBron in the pocket, lob to Ayton, LeBron in the pocket. No one picks him up. Easy layup. Oh shit. They're sick of LeBron getting it in the pocket. So they switch it. Throw it to LeBron in the post. Rui back cuts Quentin Grimes. He hits Rui along the baseline for that little short jump shot, right? Same thing, end of the game, right? LeBron is beating the man who is tagging the roller in the Luka Ayton ball screen. It's the natural read that comes from the way the defense is guarding them. And one of the things that I thought was really smart here is on that final possession, the one where LeBron hits the ISO jumper, what happened in the possessions before, right? Austin tries to go one-on-one twice. Drives on Embiid, smokes a layup. Drives on Paul George, actually gets a good amount of separation on a little left shoulder fade. He just misses it. He was out of rhythm all night. That's how it happens, right? Luka goes to a little step back three over the top of Grimes, leaves it short. Luka turns it over against the blitz. Those dudes were 12 for 40 on the night. They were not in good rhythm. And for four straight possessions, they tried and didn't have it. So after LeBron had beat the blitz, after LeBron had beat the blitzes of Ayton too, finally the Sixers go, let's switch the LeBron-Luka pick and roll. That switch puts Quentin Grimes on LeBron, and a smart basketball player in Luka goes, I don't have it right now. Austin doesn't have it right now. LeBron's feeling good. Let's give it to him. LeBron gets the ball, hits a hard left-handed move to get that little bit of separation on the step back into the jump shot. I thought it was such a perfect example in that entire fourth quarter of three really smart basketball players kind of poking and prodding the way that they like to within their games, but ultimately letting the coverages and the natural rhythm of the way those guys were playing dictate where the ball went, and it constantly just made it to the right spots, and they ended up scoring as much as they needed to down the stretch. I just thought it was two things. One, a casual reminder that, like, basketball, when you have smart players, they tend to just figure it out. And two, I can't believe anybody ever thought for even a second that LeBron could not function in this role. Because again, he had 29. Almost all of it was functioning as the play finisher in action led by Austin and Luka. And I mean, he did hit some shots, little right shoulder fadeaways and stuff earlier in the game. He did have some success on the ball. But like, LeBron is very capable of being a devastating weapon, both as a passer and as a finisher off of Luka and Austin. It is insane that anybody ever thought that this wouldn't work out.
I have so much fun watching this Lakers offense. Not every game, obviously. There's games where they struggle. The Phoenix game being an example. The Boston game. We'll talk a little bit more about those. But when this team is really clicking, they are so good at punishing teams for their choices. And it has to be so frustrating defending them, because this was not a, hey, LeBron's feeling good this game, let's just feed him the ball and feed him all of these shots. Everything came within the proper flow of the game. It all made sense. This was not about trying to get LeBron stats in this game. This was about trying to win this basketball game and making choices that were going to win the game. I particularly loved the possession where all night long, the Sixers were screwing up the tag on Ayton, like you noted, Jason. They were screwing up that tag, and Ayton was getting these lobs at the rim, and Luke was throwing them. LeBron threw some lobs, and they kept messing up that tag. They finally got it in the fourth quarter, and Luka just went, oh, cool, that means LeBron's open, and kicked the ball out to LeBron, and he drained it through. Like, if you're the Sixers bench at that point, you're just like, what the hell, man? Like, they finally nailed it, and it wound up being a LeBron three. But again, that was not because they're forcing the ball to LeBron. That's not Lestat padding or whatever people want to throw out there. That's the Lakers making the choices that the defense is giving them and using those things to beat them. They were absolutely fantastic in that regard. Jovan, I know you've got plenty to add off of that, but where do we go from here? Because I certainly don't think this is a nightly occurrence for LeBron, but I do think this is a good reminder that LeBron's still got nights like this in him.
He does. And I want to highlight the defense as well. And yeah. I want to give a shout out to the starters and just that third quarter. The first like 9 to 10 minutes of the third quarter was some of the best defense I think the Lakers have played over the last couple of weeks. And quietly, or maybe not so quietly, the Lakers have been really struggling defensively at a level we had seen a bit earlier in the season. Then they started to ascend, and now they've been on a clear decline after that Utah game that they won 108-106. The past seven games, they've been a bottom three defense. They've been 28th in defensive rating. A big part of that has been no Marcus Smart, and I think they've really missed his absence. He's been the primary driver of their defensive success in terms of on-off. But I thought that stretch there of they started switching everything. So in the first half, they were getting killed in drop coverage where Ayton and Jackson have continued to struggle playing up to touch, and they give too much space to guys who can hit pull-up threes. So Maxey, VJ Edgecombe, they're both hitting pull-up threes. They're both getting downhill. The Lakers, like, that first half was really concerning from a defensive perspective in terms of the speed of Maxey just blowing by Austin and blowing by, like, multiple Lakers defenders on most possessions. But then in the second half, it just became switch everything. And they were actually switching Ayton on to Maxey, switching Ayton on to Edgecombe, and just saying, like, hey, we're going to shrink the floor. We're going to play off of Embiid, who I thought was the most harmful player out there. Like, offensively went 4 for for 21, then defensively cannot really rotate or protect the rim. They really struggled, in my opinion, in those minutes. So they started to be like, hey, if Embiid is going to like take a three or try to beat someone off the dribble or in a mismatch, or even Dominic Barlow, they started to help off of him. They were like, we're going to send all our attention to like the primary guy on Maxi. Everybody shift over and load up the paint. And we're going to cut off his driving lanes and we're going to cut off their driving kick. So I thought that the third quarter defense, like it wasn't as sharp in the fourth, but you know, still got the job done in crunch time. But to me, that was a big turning point where like, I mean, that first few minutes of the third was the game, in my opinion, right? Like they went from down 7 at the half to I think up 8, like 4 or 5 minutes left in the third. So that few minutes stretch defensively, and LeBron was a big part of that. LeBron as the backline helper rotating. Remember, he had that one play where Maxi drove and kick or he was trying to drive and kick and LeBron blocks it and creates a transition opportunity. So LeBron was a big part of that. And I think, again, the defensive expectations with this group have to be tempered to a degree that I don't think they're going to be an elite defense that's constructed, but they can have stretches of elite defense as we've seen. And I thought that third quarter with, you know, led by LeBron, in my opinion, to a degree, that was a big part of the second half turnaround.
It was a big question going into this game. What were the Lakers going to do about Maxi? How were they going to, so when you don't have a natural point of attack defender where you could say, here, go get this guy, and especially when you're going to be in a super switchy scheme, they're going to have to make some choices and figure out what it is that they're going to do to ultimately slow these guys down, because you can't have Maxi going for 40 on high percentages. And they were able to make some of those changes that Jovan called out there in the second half. And that made a big difference, especially in that third quarter. As you said, they wound up winning the quarter 34-24. And of course, that winds up being the big quarter of separation in the game. Part of that too, I do think one of the areas where they miss Marcus Smart, beyond just his physical capabilities as a defender, but it's also as an organizer on the floor calling things out. And I thought LeBron stepped up in some ways. If you saw, he knew the Sixers play on the final possession of the game, and that was part of why he was able to just step in and steal it and steal the pass and secure that. He knew it was coming. We saw him organizing the defense quite a bit out there. And I think that's an area where he can be very, very useful for this team defensively, even if he's not going to be a lockdown defender himself night in, night out. It's organizing them. But they did come up with a pretty good scheme, I thought, in the third to turn the tide and get things going in the right direction. As you noted, they're, of course, not going to be a top line, you know, best defense in the NBA, not as presently constructed. But they did make, I think, some good choices, some that really paid off, helped that Joel Embiid really struggled in last night's game. And the Sixers defense in general, I wasn't that impressed with the way they played organizationally out there. But in any event, LeBron was fantastic. The Lakers, they made the changes they needed. Jason, this winds up being a big win for LA to close off this road trip. How do we view this trip now as a whole? You get this big performance out of LeBron, you go 2-1, you beat the Raptors, you lose that, I mean, brutal loss to the Celtics. They couldn't miss. There were a lot of things that combined for that loss, but you go 2-1 on this trip. How do you feel about the Lakers coming off of this East Coast swing?
Good. You know, I wanted to quickly follow up a couple things. I think Jovan's dead on about the defense. I thought it was one of the better defensive halves that they've played in this recent stretch. LeBron and Luka in particular, I thought, were really good at anticipating when those VJ and Tyrese drives were coming, and they were just quickly like getting in position so far before they'd get to the rim that they'd force kickouts. And honestly, that's when this Laker defense is going to be at their best, is when they can tilt things towards kickouts to some of their less effective jump shooters, right? Ayton, I thought, was phenomenal down the stretch. He had a big block on VJ Edgecombe at the basket. One where he had been giving up some fouls and layups earlier in the game, and he finally kind of timed it right and got a big stop. There was a missed floater from Tyrese Maxey on a play where Tyrese beat Jake LaRavia, but once again, Ayton was anticipating the drive, was in good position in front of the rim, and it forced Maxey to jump early, and he ended up short-arming a floater. There was another one where they ran a pick and pop, and Maxey was trying to make the kickback, and Ayton just got big with his arms on the kickback, and he ended up getting deflection that led to a steal. And ultimately, that's what this defense is going to be. To me, it's more like I'm more interested in them being able to consistently have defensive runs in second halves where they build separation. As long as they continue to show that, I don't necessarily care if they kind of chill through first halves and keep, like, it kind of almost felt like they were just trying to stay attached to Philly. in the first half. I thought the announcers actually did a good job calling this out. Just like they're doing a good job of not going down by too much. That every time Philly would push it to 9 or 10, the Lakers would cut it back down to 3 to 5, and they would just kind of hung around, and then they get to that. They ended up getting to that third quarter stretch, and I get it. Like, guys, it'd be wonderful to the comment here. Right. It'd be wonderful if this team could be an elite defense all the time, but frankly, they don't have the personnel for that as currently constructed. The guy that continues to scream off the screen for me is Rui Hachimura every time I watch them play. And Rui's been very good for them offensively, obviously. But if you just take that, a guy who's consistently making mistakes and is aloof on defense, and you turn him into a legitimate professional defender who's 6'8 and can run and jump, all of a sudden it just becomes a kind of unit that could potentially be more dynamic throughout entire large samples of games defensively. But I like the call out from Jovan, because I did think their defense was very good down the stretch. Before we get into the road trip, I did want to kind of bring up this interesting trend with LeBron, which is... he's averaging 7.6 assists per game this year, which is only 0.6 of an assist less than last year. So roughly less than a 10% decrease year over year in his assist volume. And yet he's averaging about half as many turnovers as he did last year. And what I find really fascinating about this is, if you dig into the numbers, he was running a pick and roll, an ISO, or a post up as either the scorer or as the passer about 20 times a game last year. This year it's 10 times a game. So the sheer amount of volume that he's having in opportunities to create offense on the ball is substantially lower. And one of the things I've noticed is between that and between his off-ball catches, so in the pocket, popping, you know, off of those blitzes, everything we talked about in the first segment, I feel like LeBron is being super intentional every time he catches the ball, because he knows he doesn't have very many opportunities. And so he wants to capitalize on him every time he can. And one of the things that would happen with LeBron over the years with his turnovers, it actually reminds me a lot of Luka, where there's so much high ball handling, like high ball screen, high ISO type stuff, where on like the 25th time he does it each game, you could tell like mental fatigue enters the equation, where it's like there's a sloppy Luka pass, or last year there'd be a sloppy LeBron pass, where you can tell it's because he's just run like 5 straight ball screens and he's mentally fatiguing a little bit in making a mistake. And I feel like LeBron's lowered usage has just made him surgically efficient. And as a result, his play type data across the board has been sky high. Synergy has him at 80th percentile or better in every single one of his on-ball situations, pick and rolls, ISOs, and post-ups this year. And I think a big part of that is he's having an extremely high assist rate and extremely low turnover rate. So I just thought that was kind of an interesting trend. As far as the road trip goes, make it very simple. They get their butts kicked by Phoenix. How do you want to see a championship team respond to that? You go on the road and you beat a really good team. Then you drop a game in Boston, which was very much a schedule loss. I don't want to completely write that off. Boston, for the record, too, has been kind of chewing up and spitting out everybody with their offense right now. So the Lakers are not exclusive in that sense. But I just thought Austin got off to way too bad of a start. And the Celtics shot way too... The Celtics guys in spot-up situations in that game got 1.7 points per possession. It's just completely outrageous. So, like, they've been shooting well. They've been shooting well, but that was, like, another level of completely insane. So, tip of the cap to Boston, tail end of back-to-back, no LeBron, no Luka. That happens. I'm not judging the Lakers too much for that one. Then you go on the road against a good Philly team and you beat them. So, like, all these checkpoints, being good on the road, not losing 2 games in a row, these are all things that I think bode well for this team in terms of the controllable checkpoints along their way. And I think this road trip, like coming out of the game against Phoenix, if we were like, what's a good road trip for this team? We would have said 2-1, and they went 2-1. And so I just continue to be really, really happy with them. The one major checkpoint they're missing is that signature win against a top tier championship contender. And they have an opportunity to do that this Saturday, as long as they take care of business against San Antonio.
Yeah. First of all, I love that you called out the LeBron, the turnover percentage going down, especially that's a big need on this team. We've talked about it a lot. The last 3 games, they've been much better in terms of taking care of the basketball, including last night's game. And LeBron being a factor in that is really important. Him being low turnover, despite, and the assist still being at his career, essentially numbers, despite the usage going down for LeBron, is absolutely critical for this team. But you're right. If I had my choice, I would have pushed the loss in the game against not the Celtics, anybody but the Celtics, right? Lose to the 76ers, you have to push the loss against the Rockets. It was nice to see the bounce back from the Phoenix game, though, with the uplifting buzzer-beating win against the Raptors, then the win against the 76ers. But guys, the trend continues in these close games. The Lakers continue to play well in fourth quarters. They're winning all the close ones. And then when they do lose, it's a blowout loss. The only difference about the loss to the Celtics compared to the other ones was the Lakers didn't have 19 or more turnovers against Boston, which they did in all five of their previous losses. So overall, a good road trip, but would prefer not to lose to the Boston Celtics. But nonetheless, a good road trip overall, a good bounce back, and they just continue to be that team that executes in close games. Jovan, I want to get your thoughts on the road trip, but also tell us a little bit about like them winning in all these close games. The Kansas City Chiefs did this last year where they won a bunch of close games and now they're kind of paying the piper for it and not winning as many close games this year. Is there concern that ultimately that could flip, that at some point they're going to start dropping a few close games? Or is this just what they are? Their execution is just clinical, and they're a team that if the game is close, they find a way to win.
I mean, I think they're going to lose a close game at some point, right? Yeah. I don't think they're going to go undefeated in close games this season, whether it's the regular season or the playoffs. They will drop a game in crunch time, but I think it does speak to, as we were discussing with the defense earlier, like they can go through these stretches of elite defense and you would like to see it more consistently. And I think there is an obvious adjustment that they can make, which continues to be the starting group, which has been bad defensively and overall a minus 13 net rating right now with that starting group, which is just, and if you look at the teams they've played, they've largely played average to below average teams. So the fact that the starting group is getting killed is a concern and continues to be a concern. But that aside, like, I think that they have figured out how to execute at a high level and how to extract the most out of both sides of the ball. Like, they're not only are they 8-0 in crunch time, they're the NBA's best defense in crunch time. So again, like, this ability to have, maybe a curveball to their defensive look, like, they're often throwing the fastball, people are hitting some homers off of it. They're hitting some doubles and some triples, but then they have this curveball that they could throw when the game is really tight that they can. And I think just the offensive talent of in most matchups, looking at Luka, LeBron, and Austin, you are going to have three of the four best players on the floor, at least from an offensive perspective, and three of the four players you trust the most to figure out, to Jason's point earlier, how to poke and prod and where the weaknesses of the defense. So I think I have the ultimate trust in their crunch time ability. Now, I think the defense, like, we'll see. I don't know if they'll be the best crunch time defense for the rest of the season, but I do think the offense is real. The offensive success in crunch time is real. And that is something that I do anticipate continuing. Now, will they be the only concern I have is the minutes, where looking at it last night, they had it on the broadcast. Maxi leads the NBA in minutes. And then Luka and Austin are number two and number three right now. And that is a little bit of a concern. Of the one thing I would like to see that I continue to harp on is, like, I would like to see more convincing wins where you can rest a Luka. Yeah. You can't have a Shea Gilgeous-Alexander type fourth quarter for Luka or for Austin. And even in some of their blowouts, JJ has shown a reluctance to empty the bench and, like, keep those guys in midway through the fourth. So I think that has to be a little bit on JJ and the coaching staff of, like, trust your bench a little bit more. But also, I think on the primary guys of, like, you need to create some distance. And, like, if you do play the first quarter the way you played the third quarter, then maybe you get out to a 20-point lead and you can rest, rather than kind of, like, it does sometimes feel like they are just mailing in these first halves and then they flip a switch in the third or fourth quarter. And it's like, well, sure, that works. You guys win the game and you guys continue to win, but you are racking up some minutes and workload that I would like to see decrease a little bit here.
Yeah, to your point, the starting lineup: Luka, Austin, Rui, LeBron, and Ayton in 135 possessions so far per cleaning the glass, minus 8.3 per 100. So they are not.
They were good to start the third quarter, at least. We'll give them that credit.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah, go to the start of the third quarter.
Quick stat too on the crunch. Yes. I was just curious. So Lakers opponents in crunch time this season, are shooting just 17.6% from three. So there's a certain amount of, like, you probably expect a little bit of positive regression there. The one thing I would counter that with, though, is the Lakers themselves are not shooting well from three in crunch time either. So I think one of the things that I would say is, are they a undefeated type of clutch team? No. Are they going to be, I mean, they are right now, but I mean, in terms of the large sample, are they going to be an 86 defensive rating team all season in crunch time? No. But one thing about this Laker team that is just a fact is they're an awesome half-court offense. And historically, awesome half-court offenses tend to be awesome clutch teams. So, like, some of this is, like, a real part of the way this team is put together.
You know, there was that stretch last year, I believe it was the post-All-Star break stretch, even a little bit pre, where they were one of the best defenses in the NBA, but you looked and some of that was a little bit luck because their, you know, opponents were missing wide-open threes at a higher rate than you typically would see, and regression was going to kick in there. Do you guys believe that could be part of what we're seeing here in terms of them being such a good defense in the fourth quarter? Is it somewhat luck related, or is this, you know, JJ, you know, being the chemist there, mixing and matching on the schemes? What is the truth behind the Lakers defense in crunch time?
I have always been a believer that shooting variance is a factor, but that it's way too often discussed as the main factor. And I think it's just a cheap, lazy excuse for not understanding the game to just be like, oh, they're missing, or oh, they're making. Like, there is a process that leads to every shot. And from the initial action to how much rhythm the team has to where the pass actually hit the pocket, was it on target or did the guy fumble it in his hands because you threw the pass too low or you threw the pass too high or you didn't line up the seams properly, or like, was the guy closing out just to be there, or did he do a good job disrupting with his closeout of like attacking the pot? There's so many different factors that go into shot variance. And so to me, it's always worth mentioning, like, yeah, the teams might shoot a little better, but like to go there and just discount an entire team's performance based on shot variance, I think is some lame basketball analysis.
I'm with you on that ultimately. Jovan, I want to give you a chance to respond to this here. But yes, Jason, I agree that it can't all just be drilled down to, well, it's shot variance and that's it. This super chat, by the way, guys, we will hit, we'll get to your super chats. We're going to get them at the end, but because this was in the flow of our conversation here, randomly tune in. Jovan taking shots at the starters like clockwork. Look at the bench production. There's no replacement available. Well, particularly with no Marcus Smart right now, because I'm in agreement with you ultimately, Jovan, that it would be Smart taking that spot. I still have, and I've talked about this a lot on Lakers Nation, I believe the fifth starter is not on the team right now, that's going to have to be acquired via trade. But what would you prefer to a starting lineup? That, again, the numbers right now tell you they're not getting it done to start off games.
So two things can be true here.
Yeah.
The Lakers starting group can be struggling, and there could also not be a great alternative off of the bench, right? So it doesn't have to be an either or proposition. To Trevor's point, like, so I was looking at NBA.com. They have a minus 13 that you referenced, cleaning the glass, mm-hmm. which is filtering out some of the garbage time stuff. And that was, I think you said minus 8.2, 8.3. Either way, those are both bad numbers. And if you look at the caliber of competition that the Lakers have played with their starters, it's only been five games, but based on the caliber of competition, they've all been like play-in-esque teams to lottery teams. And then you look at some of the other teams, I continue to reference OKC and Denver and Houston with their primary starting groups are slaughtering everybody. So that continues to me be like the thing that I'm looking at. And if you want to, you know, I know I've been hard on Rui, and I think he's the clear guy that should move to the bench. But even taking out Rui, the Lakers big three right now has a minus 8.9 net rating with those three on the floor. You take off one of the three and go with any two-man combination, whether it's LeBron, Luka, LeBron, Austin, Luka, that jumps up to a plus 13.9 net rating. So this is actually not just a starting specific thing, but it is to some degree a big three specific thing where they have to figure out the optimal way to unlock these three guys more consistently. Obviously we saw it last night against Philly, but like in general, so far with the sample size that we have, they have been underachieving in the minutes with the big three together, whether it is with the starters or whether it is in some hybrid bench lineup. But I also look at, even before LeBron returned, the Ayton Rui combination has been really problematic on the defensive end all season. So I'm not saying I guess if it were up to me, I would look at Jake LaRavia maybe as just, I do think there's a pretty big gap between LaRavia and Rui defensively that maybe he sort of at least brings some more two-way balance to that group. But I'm not saying that I don't think that's going to happen. I'm not saying it would necessarily work. Even, you know, I just think two things can be true here. The starters are underachieving. They have not lived up to their potential as what that group should be. But there also isn't a great alternative, especially with Marcus Smart out. Like, that's been the guy, but he's injured. He's had three different back injuries on the injury report. Like, I don't know. JJ said he was hoping he was going to play in the road trip. He didn't play in the road trip. Now he's saying he's hoping he's going to play Wednesday. But like, based on that, I think there's no assurance he's going to play. Like, so I think if you guys want me to lie, I can say that the starters look great and they're winning their minutes, but that's just not true.
Well, here's, and this is, so like this comment said, so if there isn't a great alternative, why persistently critique it? Like, the issue can be resolved. Like, it's, I look at it, I flip it. I look at it as a glasses half full, as in, look at how good, look, they're the two seed in the West. Look at how much they're winning. Look at the way their offense is operating. Look at the things that are going well, despite having this clear flaw right now. Imagine what they can be if and when this is addressed by February 5th, if and when. And this is not about, oh, Rui sucks. This is not about, we hate Rui. I hate Rui. Rui's, get Rui off the team. Don't hear what I'm not saying. Rui Hachimura is elite at what he does well, at being that catch and shoot, three-point play finisher. When defenses get locked onto Luka, get locked onto LeBron, onto Austin, the ball kicks out to Rui. He knocks down those shots at a very high rate. He's got the ability to bail you out with 5 seconds on the clock with that 15-foot jumper that he seemingly can get to just about whenever he wants. He's got other areas of his game that need work. This is not Rui is bad. This is about what's the best fit for the Lakers. And I think ideally you could solve some of these problems without trading Rui. I'm not saying get rid of Rui. If you can bring Rui off the bench, add a piece that fits your starters, and keep all of that talent together, boom, you can really have something. This is more about how does this team reach their ceiling and get to where they want to go. Yes, they've been really good so far. Celebrate that, enjoy that, but also consider how much better they can get and how much better, frankly, they're going to need to be come playoff time. This is not about trying to be overly critical of this team. This is about what the really exciting ceiling can be if you're able to plug a few holes here and there.
Let me have Jovan's back here for a second here really quick too. Like, he has pitched a resolution. He's pitched Marcus Smart. Marcus has just been hurt. The whole point is like, the data is getting overwhelming to the point where when Marcus is back, you have to strongly consider making the swap. I think above and beyond anything, like we talked about, Rui's a very big mistake-making defender, so just turning him into a good defender will dramatically improve them on that end of the floor. And then I just think the Lakers starters consistently come out flat because they don't have any natural high motor guys other than maybe Austin. And Austin tends to not be super involved in the offense in the first opening possessions, right? So, like, to me, it's just each passing game is another big piece of evidence that when Marcus Smart is healthy, he probably should be starting. Because to Jovan's point, if you're going to start beating teams up and having lower minute totals, you need to get off to better starts. And so at a certain point, you kind of have to look at Rui and be like, look, man, no offense, nothing. It's not like you've done anything necessarily wrong above and beyond what your normal strengths and weaknesses are, but we got to get some juice in this lineup. So, you know, this is what we're going to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
Appreciate it.
Be nice to Jovan, everybody.
Anybody else have any critiques of Jovan? Let's have the airing of grievances. Let's go, everybody. Get it out.
We'll talk more about Jovan and critiquing the starting lineup. I am too supportive of Austin Reeves. Jason, we'll talk about your hair and what we need to do with that situation. We'll dive into all of that. But first, we're going to talk about the Spurs matchup in just a moment, but first we need to give a shout out to our sponsor, and that is SeatGeek. We definitely do appreciate them and everything that they've done to help keep our show going, to help keep us growing. So quick shout out here to SeatGeek.
So my wife and I moved to Denver this summer, which means I'm finally back in an NBA city and I can go to NBA games again. So obviously I want to see the Lakers before the end of the season, especially before LeBron retires. So I've been looking at Lakers Nuggets in March coming up to see if I can get some tickets. And this is why I want to give the sponsor of today's video, SeatGeek, a huge shout out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. They have over 70,000 events listed on the app, obviously concerts and festivals, but sports as well, the NBA, the NFL. They even have World Cup tickets on sale right now. And my favorite thing about the app is just how easy it is to find the best deal because of their deal score. So like, these are the tickets to Lakers Nuggets in March. I can sort by deal, so I'm just looking at 10s on their deal score. These are all the best available deals in their respective sections, and look at how many options they have. So I can just pick the section in the arena I want to stay in or sit in, and I can find the best ticket in that section pretty easily. It makes that process so much easier. And they have your back. Every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use code LakersCollective10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code LakersCollective10. Make sure you click on the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you to SeatGeek.
Definitely. Thank you, SeatGeek. Guys, make sure you do use that code LakersCollective10. Use the link in the description. That way they know that you came to through us. And we do appreciate it when you guys help support the companies that help support us and keep us rolling here. All right. The Lakers take on the Spurs quarterfinals of the NBA Cup tournament. Wemby's playing, right, guys? Like, that's happening.
Always. Like clockwork.
Is there any intel on that?
Yeah, he's back at practice. And the Spurs are, last I saw, he was, quote, iffy for Wednesday.
So I've been watching a lot of
I've heard he's likely playing. I've heard he's likely playing.
Okay. Yeah. So I've been super high on San Antonio. I've been watching him quite a bit lately. There have been these two kind of unique trends with them this year, which is one, they were a pretty good offense and an awesome defense when Wemby was on the floor. And then ever since, you guys remember that catastrophe of a De'Aaron Fox game against Steph Curry, where Steph like single-handedly won the game and De'Aaron bricked like four straight mid-range jump shots down the stretch in crunch time. Ever since that game, De'Aaron Fox has been like a man possessed, just getting to the basket at will, hitting all of his jump shots, both from the mid-range and from the three-point line. He's a super underrated passer, cross-court passer. This is going to be a game that is a more complicated version of what the Lakers just faced in Philly. Essentially, a team that has much bigger and more athletic versions of the guards that that Philly brings to the table. Now, De'Aaron's not as good as Tyrese, but what he does bring is a more willing passer at that downhill guard position, and he's going to be skipping to some better jump shooters than what Philly brought to the table. In addition to that, if you guys remember, San Antonio's guards did cause some problems for Luka and Austin in their last game just because of how big and physical they were. Now, once again, that game, well, I think the Spurs actually led by like 10 or something like that in the fourth quarter of that game. The Lakers were able to walk them down with one of those classic clutch victories. And ultimately, if this can get into a close game late, I think the Lakers have a good chance to win it. But this to me is a real test. Don't be looking ahead to Saturday night against Oklahoma City. This is a very dangerous San Antonio team. When healthy, I view them in the exact same tier with the Lakers and Timberwolves as like that second tier in the Western Conference behind OKC kind of on their own. And then obviously Houston and Denver. So like, this is a real test. I look at it as, especially after, you know, a pretty easy schedule over the previous month. Thankfully, the Lakers have a little ramp up with Phoenix, with Toronto, with Boston, with Philly. This is going to be a really tough game that presents some specific challenges to some specific weaknesses for the Lakers. I'm really looking forward to it.
Jovan, this question says, surely Wemby's going to be on a minutes restriction, right? I would have to imagine.
I would assume so. They often have him on a minutes restriction when he returns from injury. So that is something that is a positive for the Lakers. I will note that, you know, Luke Kornet has statistically been one of the best rim protectors in the NBA this season. And he was someone who missed that game back in November. So I think going from Wemby to Luke Kornet is like two pretty good rim protectors, and you know, the stalwarts of that defense. So I'm looking forward to both of these teams being potentially at full strength and what that could look like, because that was an awesome game. That was probably, for my money, like the most entertaining Lakers game of the season up to this point. Of course, the Toronto game with the game winner and like just the history of LeBron's streak and what that meant, like that was an incredible game. And this Philly game with LeBron icing the game the way he did, that was also up there. And like we could go back earlier in the season, but that Spurs game, despite the fouling, despite the free throws, that was a poorly officiated game for the most part. Outside of that, that felt like a high level playoff game, a game we could see in the first round or even potentially the second round, depending on how the bracket breaks. So I think it's a nice test for LA. We've talked about this stretch of coming off of multiple games in a row, playing sub 500 teams. They're now 2-2 in this stretch, right? Like losing to Phoenix, losing to Boston, beating Toronto, beating Philly. This stretch will now continue into the Spurs game and then either OKC or Phoenix coming out of that game, whether LA wins or loses. So I think this is a really big one. This is the best team that they've played over this stretch here. And I think it is a nice barometer of where LA stacks up in the West.
Yeah, this is going to be really interesting. The last time they played the Spurs, they won 30-20 in the fourth quarter to win the game by two. So hopefully they don't put themselves in a situation where they have to make that kind of comeback. But that was also pre-LeBron returning. Marcus Smart and Jake LaRavia were in the starting lineup in that game. Yeah. There was no Austin Reeves as well. So it'll be very different this time. It was Rui, LaRavia, Ayton, Smart, and Luka were the starting five for the Lakers the last time they played the Spurs. So it's going to be a very different look, I think, on the Lakers side, certainly on the Spurs side as well. For me, so much of it is always trying to, it's a difficult task, but trying to keep Wemby from getting those shots in the paint. I thought he bailed teams out a lot last year by taking a very high volume from behind the arc, which he can hit, but that also means he's not scoring hyper efficiently in the paint. Easier said than done, of course, but the Lakers defense is going to have to be sharp because, you know, guys like Devin Vassell, Steph Castle, Dylan Harper, of course, De'Aaron Fox now adding a whole new role to or element to that team that the Lakers didn't see from them last time. That's going to be a challenge as well, because this is a team that not only do they have Wemby, who can burn you in so many ways, and again, we are expecting him to return to play against the Lakers, which tends to happen, but when you do focus your defense on Wemby, they have a lot of other guys that can get going. And for me, looking at it, I do look at Devin Vassell as a big swing player in this game, because if he's able to get going from deep on some of those kickouts, he's a guy that can get hot pretty quickly. You know you're going to get quality out of De'Aaron Fox. You know you're going to get the quickness there from Steph Castle. But when Devin Vassell really gets going too, that's where the Spurs become very, very difficult to stop.
Yeah, Devin's been shooting the crap out of the basketball lately. And like Keldon Johnson and Jeremy Sohan have been bullying their way to the basket, doing a lot of damage. Dylan Harper, since he came back, has been driving to the basket like a madman and just getting there whenever he wants. Like they're a really good team. I'm looking at this week as just an awesome this week, and then potentially obviously next week if they can get a couple of wins, as just a really good opportunity for the Lakers to demonstrate that they're ready for whatever championship path lays in front of them.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. I took a short trip out to Orlando for the last couple of days. I was there for like a total, I don't know, 15 hours or something. It was a quick turnaround, but I was talking to a Orlando Magic fan that was, you know, all in on the Magic. Fortunately, just got really good news as we were talking here about Franz Wagner. Sounds like he's not going to be out long term. It's going to be more of a 2-4 week thing. So big sigh of relief for them. Happy to see that. But he was talking about like, oh, you know, the Lakers, the Magic, they're going to play in the finals of the NBA Cup. And I said, maybe, but man, they're going to have to go through the Spurs and the Thunder to get there. If the Lakers get to the NBA Cup final, which you can care about the tournament, not care about the tournament. If they're able to get there, having to go through San Antonio and OKC to get that, this is a massive opportunity to really prove themselves. And if they can do that, and again, definitely can't look past the Spurs, because that in and of itself is going to be a difficult game. But if the Lakers even get to the NBA Cup final, that in and of itself would be a big, big statement for this team.
Totally agree.
Yep.
All right, let's get into some of our chat questions and comments here. I know a lot of people have some, not surprisingly, there's a lot of trade questions and things like that jumping in here. But in fact, Kevin throws in the first one here. Said, trade Maxey and Dalton Connect or Hayes for Grimes and Drummond. Grimes plays great defense on Austin Reeves and Luka, and Drummond is still a great rebounder that provides physicality. I've been fairly happy with what we've seen out of Jackson Hayes. I think you could use a physical big to kind of have that that arrow in the quiver to use. But I don't think you have to go find a replacement for Jackson Hayes as your backup five. And personally, I think if you're going to surrender assets, without speaking to the quality of these trades in terms of value, I think you've got squeakier wheels in terms of the athleticism on the perimeter, the defense, certainly, and especially with the injury status of Marcus Smart right now, maybe that informs of an even greater need to find a defensive guard as well on the trade front. I'm prioritizing those things over finding a physical big, even though they could use that.
I don't think that Philly does this anyway. I don't see, sure. I know Grimes is obviously heading into free agency, but I think if they have a fire sale, so to speak, with Grimes, or at least telegraph that, hey, we're willing to trade him because we're not going to re-sign him this summer, they're getting more than Maxi, Dalton, and I mean, I guess the prize here is Dalton, which we could debate how much of a prize that actually is. So I think they get some draft compensation, at least from a team that, or a more interesting young player. So if I'm Philly, I would rather, like, if this is the best haul you could get for Quentin Grimes, I would rather just ride out Quentin Grimes and see if just like the fit longer term over a larger sample size with Maxi playing like this with Edgecombe. Like, yeah, I don't see them doing that.
I missed his follow-up with saying to add a first to it to get Philly to do it. And in that case, I wouldn't go that far for the Lakers.
Yeah. Again, Quinn Grimes is not a starting caliber. Like, I don't think he's the guy that's the starting three that turns things around for the Lakers. So if you're going to include a first-round pick, it's got to be for a dude who's like a perennial starter for this team.
Yep. Agree 100%. All right. Francis said, if we missed out on Brooks, Wiggins, and Herb, should we trade to get Sadiq Bey or our old friend Kyle Kuzma? Or Portis, also add Malik Monk for the bench as a last resort. Guys, whenever I've had Malik Monk brought up, I've talked about opportunity cost and how, while I like Malik Monk, I think they've got other areas, kind of like with the big situation. But speaking to Sadiq Bey, could be kind of a sneaky target. Kyle Kuzma, I think that with the salary going into next year that he's on, I just don't see Kuzma. You know, as fun as he was as a Laker at times, I just don't see him as a target personally. I don't know. Where are you guys at?
And the Lakers don't need a power forward. Yeah, I like to the premise of the question, if the Lakers can't get that starting caliber three, then you start to look at a bench caliber three that can potentially provide a... Because so in this mix of threes that we have, you've got Rui, who's out of position. You've got Jake LaRavia, who's slow. And the thing that's driving me nuts with Jake is he just can't shoot. And that's really what's killing me with him. And then Marcus, he can't shoot, but at least he's a very good defensive player. But what's missing in that group is like a 6'8 athlete. So having at least an option, if you can't get a starter, at least have an option at the three that's at least a fringe starter / bench weapon that's a 6'8 athlete. And I think Sadiq Bey falls into that mix, but Kuzma or Portis don't. And Malik Monk, I think it's not that I wouldn't love to have, like, if we could have Malik Monk instead of Gabe Vincent, I'd be thrilled. But it's one of those things where I'm just not sure that that's a useful direction to throw assets for a bench ball handler. It's just, ultimately, when this team's in a 7.5-man playoff rotation, they're not going to need Malik Monk.
All right, let's go. And I agree with that. Let's go here. Let's help the Clips. said no one ever. Dalton and Maxi, for, I know there's a desire for to not give OKC a high pick, but Dalton and Maxi for Chris Paul and Derek Jones Jr. I mean, I would love to get Derek Jones. That's the real prize in this deal. And I know he's hurt right now, but it's Derek Jones Jr. I don't see this as helping the Clippers. This is helping the Clippers. They're drowning. You're tossing them a life preserver, but not telling them it's made out of cement.
I'd take Derek Jones in a heartbeat. I love
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to throw in some sort of, you got the expiring money of CP3 and Maxi, but it's really almost Dalton for Derek Jones, which I don't see why the Clippers are getting off his extra year of his deal. But I think, again, similar to Quentin Grimes, if you're actually making Derek Jones Jr. available, there will be teams that will outbid this.
Well, yeah. And so let's change the question here. Jovan, would you trade a first round pick for Derek the way you would for Herb? I'm not sure I would. I like Derek.
I don't think I would. Better. So I do err on the side of being more aggressive with trading picks. I think that the context here, obviously, is like the Giannis situation and or whatever stars are going to become available over the next year, that the Lakers having that extra first could be a big factor in whether they can acquire that player. So ideally, you've done your due diligence and have some sort of sense of, can you acquire Giannis or who might else be out there that you're interested in acquiring? And that factors into the calculus here. But in a vacuum, I would consider it. It probably is an overpay, especially based on the current assets the Lakers have and the assets they have to trade. At the same time, I think they're going to have a much higher threshold to trade a first. So I don't think that they would do that.
All right, let's go here. You notice the gap between Luka and Reeves in a game like this. It's still very wide, which it always will be. I'm wondering what we could realistically get for Reeves. Would it be, we'd be selling high? I get that question all the time. Is that something the Lakers could explore? Where are you guys at on the idea of finding out the value for Austin Reeves?
Austin's going to be fine. Again, like he broke off Paul George for an awesome look in crunch time last night. He was off. It happens. I do think the discussion surrounding his legs is important. I think he was a little worn down. I think he's going to enjoy this Monday and Tuesday off from real games. My thing with the Reeves thing that I keep coming back to now is Austin has become so good that there is literally no version of an Austin trade that makes the team better unless it gets you Giannis. So unless it's next summer and it's fetching you Giannis, it just is dead on arrival for me. Because like, even if you get a Herb Jones, let's say that you included him for Herb Jones, which would be stupid, obviously, but like you get a very good above average starter for the small forward position and you're giving up an all NBA player right now. So like to me, Austin is just in a stratosphere right now as like a well-rounded, polished offensive engine kind of dude that like, there's just no version of a trade for him that makes the team better.
And I mean, this dude just had 80 points and 18 assists in the two previous games. Like, I know he had it. Clearly, you know, he started the Boston game off slow and he started 0-for-8 against Philly and Maxey cooked him for stretches of that game. Like, I get that, but this dude is putting up insane production. And the thing I continue to say with trading Austin now versus later is he actually has more value later in terms of either trading him in the offseason in a sign-in trade or trading him next season when he's on a higher salary, because the lone exception here of trading Austin now would be you'd have to be getting like a rookie scale contract player that is making, you know, somewhere in the 15 or under $1 million. That like, okay, sure. Is it a conversation if it's like an Amen Thompson? I think that's someone you'd have to consider, like with the fit next to Luka and like longer term, what he can be. But outside of something like that, or to Jason's point, like a Giannis trade, it just doesn't really make sense right now. I think you're actually selling him low because of the salary. And even if you're throwing in a Rui or a Maxey or a Gabe, there are not, like, look at the players making $25 to even $30 million. Austin's better than all of them. So it's hard for LA to get into that like $40+ million max contract range with their salaries. And if you're not getting into that range, Austin's better than all these dudes. So I don't think it makes sense.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I don't think it makes sense. I also think for another team, he's a flight risk because he could leave in the summertime. So it's, you're not going to get the value that you're. It's very unlikely. And you never say never. Luka is a Laker. You never say never in today's NBA. But it's very unlikely that you're going to find a Austin Reeves trade right now that improves the Lakers. Right now. Next year, maybe, who knows? 2 years from now, maybe, who knows? But right now, very unlikely you're going to find a trade that improves the Lakers. I like this comment, F that drone. That was really annoying. That drone bizarre. Kept going in front of the screen, and it wasn't getting very good shots anyway. So I was not a fan of the drone in Philly.
No.
I watched the Lakers broadcast, but when I went on Synergy this morning to rewatch portions of the game, I was getting the Sixers broadcast, and like the drone footage was just weird. I wasn't a fan.
It's cool in WWE, they'll use it to go around the ring and like fly by the crowd and do some cool sweeping shots and stuff. But the way the Sixers were utilizing it and everything, the quality wasn't there. And it was annoying. It was frustrating having it right in front of the camera. I kept thinking like a spider was crawling across the floor or something. Somebody on my post game last night said they thought it was a bat. And I say, bring in Manu Ginobili. He'll take care of that thing. The notorious CRG said, amazing how the haters decide LeBron's stats are only about longevity, but turnovers and missed shots are because he sucks. Dude is a 23-year-long stud. Yeah, I mean, we see it, right? When you get the player first stand-em, right? The fans, really on either side, the haters, the stands, right? There will be mental gymnastics done in either direction, and we'll see it, you know, from the haters too. I couldn't believe people were livid coming off of that game that LeBron only had 8 points at the Toronto game. If you gave LeBron, I couldn't believe the response. If you gave LeBron praise for making the pass to Rui Hachimura, which is legitimately, he made the right play and Rui hit the three and the Lakers won the game. It was all just the haters wanted. They wanted their opportunity to victory lap LeBron not having a good game and couldn't, and were incensed that anyone could spin something in a positive way for what LeBron James did. But yes, there are people who will go through all kinds of mental gymnastics when it comes to LeBron James. It's just par for the course.
I actually have a really short little LeBron rant here. I hate how the way he's being discussed by a lot of people with like how he looks is it's being framed as though he's worn down from decades of playing, when the reality is he's ramping up, like he's ascending as an athlete. Last night was a perfect example. Like, forget about what happened in the fourth quarter. From the jump, he looked far and away the most springy and athletic he's looked all season. Like, he's ramping up. Now, the question is, will he be able to ramp up to the same level he did last year? We don't know. Probably less likely than last year, but it's certainly still in the realm of possibility. And so who knows? But I think it's pretty likely that he's going to at least get close to all NBA level LeBron in terms of just the level of impact he can reach on both ends of the floor. That's what I think is the most likely outcome. And then the second piece of it is like, will he get hurt? Which again, it's a valid point to make, but like, last year was very different. He got hurt after he literally carried the team like an MVP for months while Anthony Davis was hurt and while Luka Doncic was hurt. This year, he's running half as much action in the half court as he did last year. He's standing around spotting up more than ever. He's literally playing the fewest minutes per game of his entire career. He's not playing back-to-backs, at least not now, until he's finished ramping up. So, like, my thing is, like, he's ramping up. He's going to keep getting more athletic. We'll see what level he gets to. And the Lakers are controlling what they can control in terms of keeping his workload down to try to minimize injury risk. So, like, I think people have taken way too much of a glass half empty approach with LeBron through his first couple weeks.
I said the haters, they've been waiting for this for a long, long, very long time, Jason.
Keep fucking waiting, man. Pardon my language.
There's a clippable
there
moment.
We go.
I love it. Francisco said, what athletic wings for the Lakers besides Wiggins, Herb, and Ellis? How's about McDaniels, Alexander Walker, Oscar Thompson, Hunter, White, Neese? I mean, all those guys would be great, but I also say all of those guys are probably not available. That, and Jovan, you've spoken to this a lot about how it's not just about, well, this player would be great for the Lakers, but it's going to be about how the coming weeks play out and what decisions teams make to actually make players available.
Yeah, the only two players I could see potentially being available here would be Walker or, you know, Na and DeAndre Hunter. But DeAndre Hunter, I think he's better defensively than Rui, but I think it's similar enough to the point of, like, I think he's also probably more of a four than eight. Like, I think when we talk about the Lakers' fifth starter, it has to be someone who could defend one through three. And if you could defend to some fours and sure, even be like a one through five defender, that would be great. And some of these guys can do that, but I think it has to be like, can you take last night? Can you be the primary guy on a Tyrese Maxey? And can you switch onto Vijay Edgecombe and not miss a beat? And can you maybe even switch onto Paul George and not miss a beat? And the Lakers don't really have a guy who could do that other than Marcus, but he is obviously out right now. So yeah, I mean, White, like, Boston's a three seed right now. I don't see why Boston is if anything, Boston, I think, can look at the East and be like, if we could get Tatum back with enough time, maybe we have a shot to get out of here. Nesmith, I've talked about. I think the price is going to be really high, and they're looking at this year as a gap year. Ausar Thompson, like, they're the one seed in the East right now. They're not going to just sell him off. And then McDaniels has really grown offensively for Minnesota, and I think that price would be astronomically high to the point that the Lakers couldn't reach it. So I think maybe like Walker or Hunter are interesting, but even Hunter on a, you know, I mean, Cleveland right now is a play-in team, but I think they will turn things around at some point this season. So maybe Atlanta falls off the rails enough to where they're like, hey, can we just sell off some of our rotation guys for assets? But realistically, I don't think any of these guys are getting traded this year.
I don't necessarily love Nikhil Alexander-Walker as the fifth starter either. Like, he'd be pretty far down on the list for me.
A little too small.
I agree with you, Jovan. To me, Hunter's another four who plays some three. And frankly, when I watch the Cavs this year, Hunter's every bit as bad as Rui on defense. Like, the dude is a space case who leaves shooters, misses box outs, fails to make those extra efforts. Like, yeah, the only guy on this list that I see is like a reasonable, like, puncher's chance trade threat would be an Aaron Nesmith kind of guy. But like, even then, if I'm Indiana, I feel like we're competing next year, so I want to keep Aaron. So yeah, I'm with Jovan. I think most of these are pretty unrealistic,
which is why Rupelink is going to have a bit of a mountain to climb. He's got some work in front of him in order to find that proverbial fifth starter we've been talking about. Lakers Collective Drip Show Shop said, Lakers Collective, who in the group is LeBron, Luka, and AR? I don't know what we figured out.
We've done this one before, haven't we?
Yeah. We have. Y'all, the new big three, we appreciate it. But I don't know that we can slot into
Dress Lechis.
There it is. So I'm not even going to say it, because the last time I said it, everybody reacted to how white I said it, and it was awful. And to the point where I actually had to play the clip for my wife, and she then played the clip for her friends, and it was, everybody had a good laugh over how horribly I pronounced that. But anyway,
that's hilarious.
MJ said 0.8 assists for the season. Rui, I'm shooting and not swinging the ball once I get it. Hotch 3, Murrah. Who has the assist lower stat, Michael Porter Jr. or Rui? I don't know.
I got to pull up their usage rates. The difference in usage rates between massive. Those two guys has to be insane. I'm looking it up.
Besides, Rui is on a team with LeBron and Luka and Austin. Like, his job is not moving the basketball. His job is...
He had
is
a game with one shot attempt the other day.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. What?
I'm pulling it up. Hang on. All right, Michael Porter Jr.'s usage rate this season is... 29.
Rui's not bad.
Rui's not. Yeah. No, Rui's not near that. Yeah.
Rui's at 15. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I'm not blaming Rui for not passing the ball. Rui's job is to finish plays.
Here's one. I appreciate Trevor's intro, but can we start off one time with yo-yo? I think we can workshop that. We can make something. We're still developing all of our, you know, chemistry and rhythms and all those sorts of things. We can figure out something with that. Yeah, I'm speaking for Jovan here. Like,
I love Trevor. I love Jovan's intro. Jovan's intro is awesome.
I need Trevor to do it one time. Well, you just did it, but I just did it.
Yeah, just start a show. We'll do it Thursday. Yeah. Everybody come back Thursday, and we'll do it to start that show.
When Somebody's we go as a guest on Jovan's pod, we should get to do the yo-yo intro at least.
Oh, that's a good idea. You should make all your guests do it.
I like it. We'll do it.
First-time listener, what is the real story on Vando's DNPs and 3 minutes in the last game? I mean, we've talked about this a bit, but it's like... It's not just as simple as the shooting, but it also is kind of just the shooting, right?
Well, I like, and also what happened last game was Jake LaRavia got busted in the face, and then Adu Thierro came in and was just kind of sloppy and fouling and getting out of position. And so I think literally circumstance forced JJ to go with Vando. But we've talked about it at length on the show. He's just a... in their switching scheme, he's not as valuable defensively as he typically is, and he's by far the worst offensive player on the team. So it's really difficult to find a role for him.
Did you have something to add there? You have one?
No, I mean, the only thing I was going to note quickly was, like, if you saw Philly, the three that he attempted, which he missed, Philly didn't even rotate over. Like sometimes you'll see people do the like fake rotate over and just kind of do like the half ass contest. They were just like, shoot it. And he missed it. And like,
it was on the first possession.
Yeah.
It was on the first possession. I think like as reductive as it sounds and as reactionary as it sounds, like I do think like he kind of needed to make that shot just to earn some goodwill back with how they have viewed him. And it was 8 straight DNPs going into last night. So he came out there. I thought he had, you know, he had the near offensive rebound. He had a couple of nice possessions tracking guys around screens, but ultimately like
good foul on that one. Good foul. Was it Embiid's back or Drummond's back?
Which, hey, I want this team to hard foul more, but yeah, I mean the offense is just, it is what it is.
Any thoughts on getting away with a Derrick Jones Jr. level guy as a fit starter? I just feel like a guy like a healthy Matisse Thybulle would be fine. The problem is he's never healthy with Matisse Thybulle. But Derrick Jones Jr., sure, I can't imagine the Clippers wanting to do anything to help the Lakers. Now, again, it's going to be a challenge to find. I know everybody wants the answer. Everybody wants, who is it that the Lakers get to be that guy? Every guy we talk about, it's, well, it could be that guy, but could be that guy. But, right, there's all these reasons why you getting that guy is going to be a challenge, and that's the landscape that, you know, there's a reason why Rob gets the big bucks. He's going to have to find a way through and get something done.
Yeah, so do they have 0 second-round picks available or one?
One.
One.
Like, second, Derek Jones one first, is probably and a few swaps.
Yeah, to me, Derek Jones is one of those guys, like, if I could get him for a second or for a swap, I think I'd be interested. I'm not sure he's quite worth a first-round pick. But I will say he's probably the worst version of a guy that I do view as a legitimate starting caliber small forward that could play in this lineup. I think Andrew Wiggins is the best, not the best overall situation because he's older, but just pure who's the best basketball player in a vacuum. I think Wiggins is the best of the available options with a small gap between him and Herb. Herb is probably the best overall option if you factor in his age. Derek Jones, let's call the worst in that spectrum for me, is what I view as like legitimate starting caliber threes that could get into that spot.
Let's go.
Derek did an amazing job on Anthony Edwards, if you guys remember, in the Western Conference Finals a couple years ago. Like, he's legitimately an awesome perimeter defender, very, very good athlete. He's become a guy, too, that he's a vertical spacer, which Luka actually made use of when he was in Dallas, too.
Mm-hmm. He definitely did. Jason, don't cut your hair. We're the long hair gang. Just sub the hoops tonight.
Thank you for the support, Drip Show Shop. I've been there getting a lot of slander for the hair, so you're encouraging
If we could hit our absolute ceiling offensively, what do you think is the lowest caliber 3-and-D wing? We kind of just, it's that, yeah, they can trade for to still be true contenders. Well, I mean, we kind of just talked about it with Derek Jones Jr. So we can move on here, but I do appreciate the super chat. Just happened that we just answered that one. Come to a basketball game in Europe. You'll get an unforgettable experience. You will see the passion of crazy fans singing, jumping, throwing smoke flares. I've always wanted to go to a soccer game in Europe. I want to just go to Europe. I haven't been, but have either one of you guys been to a basketball game in Europe?
No, I need to go to a game in Serbia. That is on my bucket list. I will try to make it out alive.
Next summer or the following summer, I'm going to make my first Europe trip, and I'm with you, Jovan. I would love to go to just one of those crazy EuroLeague games. That'd be fun.
That'd be a blast. All right. Nuggets got off of Michael Porter Jr.'s contract and upgraded to Cam Johnson for just one first. Anything similar we can do with Vando? Well, I think there's a gap between MPJ and Vando, and that's the problem. Like, comparing the two is tough.
Yeah, I mean, if you attach a first to Vando, I think, you know, you could, there's also the constraints of the money here, where mm-hmm. MPJ is making $40 million. So that gave, and they did that in the off season when there's a little bit more flexibility with the cap situation. So with the constraints of like Vando's salary, plus the constraints of the amount of money that the Lakers could take back, they can't take back a dollar more. That, I think, limits the pool. And even then, I think, more. Well, I mean, yeah, but they got to be careful with how much they take back. Yeah. I don't know. I think in some ways you might have to attach a first to get this to like a neutral or like slightly positive asset. So I don't think you're getting back like a crazy contract for Vando in a first.
the version of this deal is the Rui plus a first plus some other contract for
that's
a,
more
know, for an Herb or a Wiggins. Like, that's the version of the Nuggets deal. And ideally, if you're one of those other teams, you think, oh, we think Rui's a good player that we can turn into something that we then turn around and flip, you know, kind of like Brooklyn's going to end up flipping MPJ for another first this year. And they're going to get two firsts out of Cam.
Do you have any concerns about Herb defensively getting back to where he was, like, say, last season? Do you think he will get there?
I think he will. I mean, there's only so much you can do with a lineup that has limitations, but, like, give any legit awesome basketball player LeBron, Luka, and Austin on his ass every day about doing his job, and I think you're going to get some pretty high-level hoops out of him, just like we've seen with so many of these players this year.
All right, we'll finish with this. Imagine Latrev appearing on Buha's block and saying, "Yo, yo, I'm Alan Sliwa. This is Buha's block." That would break everyone's brain. People would not know what the hell they tuned into.
Got like the Marvel multiverse here.
Exactly. Exactly.
This was a fun show, guys.
That was. Yeah. This was a lot of fun. Thank you, everybody. Guys, great way to kick off the week. Obviously, coming off of a Lakers win. Hopefully, we're doing the same on Thursday. Same time. Yeah. It'll be 11 a.m. Pacific time. But hopefully, guys, we're doing the same thing on Thursday, and the Lakers are able to take care of the Spurs Wednesday night.
Yeah, and Jovan survived his trip. I'm glad. Back on the West Coast. Are you jet-lagged at all? Doing okay?
A little bit, but I managed to stay on West Coast timing, so I was constantly going to bed at 3 and waking up at 11 or 12. So I adjust to my night owlness to the environment. But quickly, I will note that I will be going live later today to recap Lakers Sixers for those who I didn't get to go live last night. So we'll be scheduling that for those who are subscribed to my channel.
All right, everybody, we appreciate all of you being here. Yep, it's Lakers party. We have a good time hanging out here talking Lakers basketball. We'll be back on Thursday, 11 a.m. Pacific time. Make sure you do subscribe to the channel. Turn on those notifications as well. Till then, everybody, see ya and stay safe.